welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. Later in the show, we'll be hearing from Micah about their food pantry and from Al Biela about an event called Music Underground Ames. In addition, we'll have Mary Rankin here, who will be doing her monthly segment on sustainability. This week, many of us have been following the start of the legislative session, and KHOI will be bringing you stories throughout the session on bills that are pending or have been introduced or are in the pipeline. And so we decided to start that off today, talking about something that's already been introduced. So we're joined by Erin Davison Rippey, the Director of Public Affairs at Planned Parenthood of the Heartland. Thanks so much for being with us, Erin.
Thanks for having me, Gail. I appreciate it.
First of all, maybe you can tell the listener what states or areas are covered by the Heartland in your title.
Yeah, absolutely. So Planned Parenthood of the Heartland has served women and men of all ages since the 1930s. Today, we offer a full range of quality reproductive health care services to residents in both Iowa and Nebraska. We have 14 health centers, plus education resource centers in Des Moines, Lincoln, and Omaha.
And before we get into the actual funding bill, would it help to explain how funding for Planned Parenthood works in Iowa, because it's different than other states, you were just telling me.
Yeah. So Planned Parenthoods in all states have their funding supported in a variety of ways. Planned Parenthood of the Heartland is supported by revenue from our patients. We're a healthcare provider, so like other healthcare providers, have that funding stream. We do have contributions from supporters, so private donors, sometimes private grants. And then we have what we sort of call public funding. So that is funding that comes from a variety of public entities. The biggest one, particularly here in Iowa, is Medicaid. So that's reimbursements for services provided through the Medicaid program. So patients come in who are covered by Medicaid, and we reimburse, like any other healthcare provider, send in that bill for those services.
Okay, so yeah, when people hear about, you know, government funding for Planned Parenthood, somehow they think the government is just giving you a chunk of money to run your organization. But that's not the way it works at all.
Right. Yeah, and if you kind of walk through, follow a patient. So let's say someone comes into us and has Medicaid coverage. They come to Planned Parenthood for their preventive care annual exam. So somebody might get birth control, an STD test, other kinds of care. We submit a claim to Medicaid. Medicaid pays Planned Parenthood for those services. And then there's kind of a state-federal match when it comes to Medicaid. So the state pays for part of Medicaid, and then the federal government pays for part of that Medicaid bill as well.
Okay. That's good to understand. Mm-hmm. So defunding Planned Parenthood, or stopping that funding to Planned Parenthood, was stated as a goal in Governor Branstad's condition of the state address this week, and a bill has already been introduced in the legislature with that end. So what would that bill actually do?
Yeah, so Senate File 2, which is the bill that we're talking about, is targeted at a very specific Medicaid program. So within Medicaid, there are a few different programs. Iowa has what we call one of the gold standards of family planning Medicaid programs. It's a program that allows both women and men, up to 300% of the federal poverty line, to receive family planning services. So primarily, this is services that are intended to prevent unintended pregnancies. So folks can come to Planned Parenthood, but they can also go to any other qualified Medicaid provider. So there are hundreds of different providers that provide services through this Medicaid family planning program. So this bill specifically would cut Planned Parenthood out of this family planning program. Now, one of the key pieces here is that because it's a Medicaid program, right now the federal government says you can't just cut out a provider that's qualified because you don't like them. So in order to cut out Planned Parenthood from this program, the state has to walk away from the federal government's portion of what they're paying for that program. For this family planning program, the federal government says this is a really smart way to spend money. It's preventing unintended pregnancies that would otherwise be paid for with Medicaid. So the federal government picks up 90% of the tab. So the state in this proposal, Senate Republicans who've proposed this bill, are proposing that the state walk away from, you know, up to about $3 million of federal funding and switch to using all state funds, so about $3 million worth of state funds, in order to say Planned Parenthood, you can't be a service provider in this program, and cutting off men and women from their service provider of choice.
And so that shortfall in funding or in paying for care would have to be provided by Iowa taxpayers.
And what, you know, we're still looking for some additional detail. The Senate Republicans who have proposed this bill don't have funding attached to it. So they're dismantling the current program. They're walking away from this federal funding, but they're not saying how they're going to pay for it. And we would question whether or not they even intend to pay for it. Now, the governor has said to some media sources that he intends to use this other funding stream. That funding stream right now is being used for things like foster care services and services for disabled Iowans.
Okay. So in light of, how the governor describes our overall fiscal situation this year, this seems like a not very sound idea.
No, we would say it is absolutely fiscally irresponsible. I mean, this is just this is outrageous in a time when, you know, services are being cut and there are proposed budget cuts to walk away from millions of dollars of money from the federal government just to, you know, play this political game.
And the assumption behind this also is that the other providers that do exist in the state would be able to absorb these patients. Yeah. What's the likelihood that that is a reality?
Right. So I think one of the misnomers that has been circulating, first of all, is that some people are claiming that Planned Parenthood is the only provider who gets money from this program. As I said before, there are a lot of different providers who are participating in this program. However, Planned Parenthood serves a significant number of the patients in this program. And so we know that, you know, there are a lot of patients and visits that would have to be absorbed by other providers. So in this program, in the last fiscal year, Planned Parenthood had over 10,000 visits in this program. It's a lot of times of people walking into our health center. And one of the benefits of Planned Parenthood is that, you know, this is the kinds of services that we specialize in. This is what we do. So, for instance, in some places, Keokuk is a great example. We have a health center in Keokuk. The nearest family planning provider is more than 30 miles away. So you have that distance challenge. At Planned Parenthood, you can come in, you know, you can call us. We can see somebody within maybe a week to 10 days. Well, in Keokuk, not only do you have to drive more than 30 miles to see another provider, it's going to be 6 to 8 weeks before you can get in and be seen by that provider. So there really isn't kind of that apples to apples comparison of, oh, you can just go to another provider, because the services aren't necessarily going to be the same. We're considered what people would call a safety net provider. And so we're accustomed to, you know, we can accept walk-in patients. We get people in the door quickly. We ensure that people are leaving our clinic with their birth control method either in hand or, you know, on their person. And that's not something that, you know, general practice providers are always equipped to do. Mm-hmm. Some of the most effective birth control methods, such as IUDs, kind of long-acting reversible contraceptives, we are very equipped to provide those services. We do, you know, many of the IUD insertions every single day. If you go to your family practice provider, they may not have the device, they may not have experience with it, and so the access really isn't the same, even in urban areas.
So Planned Parenthood has the expertise that other providers may not.
Expertise and capacity, too.
Okay. Yeah. And other providers may not necessarily accept Medicaid. Is that right?
That is absolutely true. So for any of us who have ever tried to, schedule an annual exam, we know that, you don't just call and get in most places and just be seen the next day. But Planned Parenthood particularly, we do accept Medicaid. We're accepting new patients at all times. That's not the case for, private practice, OB-GYNs, or other providers. If they accept Medicaid at all, again, you're dealing with that long wait, or they may not accept it.
And because of the fee structure with Medicaid and Planned Parenthood's mm-hmm. sliding fee scale, this would disproportionately impact low-income clients. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So as I said, this program specifically is for Iowans who are under 300% of the federal poverty line. So folks who are in this program are low-income Iowans. And so those are the folks that would no longer have access to their provider of choice.
And I was reading that there was a recent poll that was done, I think, by the Des Moines Register. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah. So last spring in 2016, the Des Moines Register issued poll results that said that 74% of Iowans support public funds going to Planned Parenthood for just these services. So when we look at those numbers, it's very clear that the lawmakers that are proposing this legislation are absolutely defying the will of their voters. And that's incredibly frustrating for us and incredibly frustrating for the people who are trying to access services.
So what do you think is their end game or their motivation? What are they really trying to accomplish?
I can't speak to motivations. I can only speak to the impact. And, what we see is that the lives and the health of everyday Iowans, of some of the Iowans that are most at risk, their health and safety is being impacted through this political play. So we see, our patients would be impacted. And then when you look at how they're going to fit the bill for this, we see that funding is likely being pulled from things like foster care and services for Iowans with disabilities. And that's frankly just abhorrent. I mean, I can't justify that for any reason.
We've heard a lot about fake news recently, and I'm just wondering if part of the momentum behind these kinds of moves has been related to those fake or drastically altered tapes that came out about Planned Parenthood a year or two ago. What are your thoughts on that?
Those videotapes that, as you said, were very much altered and used as propaganda, it's something that comes up. But quite frankly, Planned Parenthood has been experiencing attacks like this for the entire life of the organization. We're celebrating our 100-year anniversary.
Is that
nationally.
Right?
Yep. Whoa. Nationally. Here in Iowa, we've been around since the 1930s, but nationally since we have our centennial celebration. This is not new. People have been coming after, when Planned Parenthood was founded, it was about contraceptives and birth control, and that was incredibly controversial. And people used, fake news back then to try to cut access to contraceptives. We still deal with that today, but we've been around for 100 years. We're not going anywhere, and we will continue to fight for the rights of all Iowans, all Americans, to access the healthcare services that they deserve, no matter their zip code or their income.
Do you have a sense of how this bill will do? Do you think that because of the Republican majorities in both houses now, it has a better chance? Because you said a similar bill was introduced the past few years.
Yeah. We have seen legislation very similar to this the last couple of legislative sessions. And prior, to this year, the Iowa Senate just said this is a non-starter. We're not going there. It's hard to know what's going to happen with the new majority in the Iowa Senate. But I think that lawmakers who may be thinking this is just kind of an easy maybe box to check, they're going to mm-hmm. go after Planned Parenthood and move on, are already realizing that we have hundreds of thousands of supporters and patients who are not going down without a fight. So we know that already this bill that we're talking about, which has been assigned to the Judiciary Committee, we let our supporters know that this was happening. And they've already received over 1,000 emails from people telling them this is not the way to go. And we are committed to ensuring that we advocate for the rights of our patients and for the 74% of Iowans that support these services. I spend most of my days at the Capitol, at the Iowa Capitol. We have a team of us that will be up there every single day. We're working in legislative districts, working with our supporters to make sure that their voices are heard and that lawmakers know that this is not what they should be focusing on. As we've talked about, the state budget is in crisis, and so spending time on these politically divisive and, frankly, unpopular kinds of efforts, it's just not what Iowans want their lawmakers doing.
And what's happening at the national level? What are the prospects there for similar kinds of defunding efforts?
Sure. So as we're looking at congressional efforts to repeal the Affordable Care Act, Speaker Paul Ryan did announce that he would like to, you know, quote unquote, defund Planned Parenthood through those efforts. So we're tracking that very closely. The repeal of the Affordable Care Act, we know, is also very unpopular. So this is, at the congressional level, not going to be an easy box to check there either. So we don't know yet what the prospects are, but I think we have very similar parallels happening both at the state and federal levels, both in terms of what elected officials are doing, but also in terms of the response of people who support Planned Parenthood and access to family planning services coming out and saying, we won't stand for this. This is not what Americans want. This is not what Iowans want. And we are putting up a fight.
You personally are located here in Iowa. So you're, as you said, you're at the Iowa Capitol regularly now that the legislature is in session. What's happening in the other states that are part of Planned Parenthood of the Heartland?
Sure. So in Nebraska, their legislature gaveled in just a few days before Iowa. And in Nebraska, we actually already have a bipartisan bill that supports the creation of a very similar program to the one that's under attack
the creation
of the program. Yes. So we have some good positive things happening.
Okay, that's good to hear.
Yeah. In the state of Nebraska, there are some challenges, too. There have been a few negative bills introduced, but quite honestly, nothing like what we're seeing in Iowa. And when we look nationally, Iowa is one of the first legislatures to kind of gavel in. So our understanding is that the defunding fight that we are having here in Iowa is kind of at the forefront. We're one of the first out of the gate, and the Iowa legislature is one of the first states to try this this session, this year. So, you know, the country is watching us. The country is watching very carefully to see how this plays out in Iowa. Other legislatures often follow one another and, you know, use ideas from one state house to another. Oftentimes, cookie-cutter bill language appears in one state that you've seen in another. So, I think Iowans, lawmakers, need to be aware that we're under scrutiny. The rest of the country is looking to us to see how we handle this and whether or not we advance the interests of Iowans or spend our time on divisive political rhetoric.
So this is important, if you have an opinion on this, to voice it. Maybe that's the last thing we should talk about. What should people do if they want to express their opinion on this?
Absolutely. So I would encourage everyone to contact your elected officials, whether that's your elected officials at the State House, in Congress, even your local elected officials. Develop a relationship with them. Have those conversations. You know, go to their Saturday forums. Send them an email. Give them a call. Get to know them and let them know what your opinions are. Also, in a couple, just a little over a week, There's going to be a women's march in Des Moines on the Capitol, kind of mirroring
the 21st.
On the 21st, mirroring that that's happening in D.C. Planned Parenthood and many other organizations are participating in that, and we'd love to have folks join us at the Capitol. The march starts at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Thanks for those suggestions, and thanks for being here.
Thank you. We've
been talking with Erin Davison Rippey from Planned Parenthood of the Heartland. And I'll let people know that on Saturday here in Ames, League of Women Voters is having their first legislative wake-up. It starts at 8 o'clock in the City Council chambers here in Ames, and some of the legislators from this area will be there, and people have an opportunity to hear from them and ask them questions and raise points.
Great. And I would say that some of the legislators, particularly Beth Wessel Crochelle, Lisa Huddins, Senator Herman Kornbach, are very well versed on these issues and would be happy to talk more to folks about what's happening at the Capitol.
Thanks again, Erin.
Thank you.
My guest is Josie Stalen from MICA. That's Mid-Iowa Community Action. I asked Josie to come because of the shortage that we've heard about at the MICA food pantry.
Actually, Kay, due to the holidays, we have seen an increase in our donations, which we are really, really grateful for. We just hope to see this continue into the spring and summer, just because the holidays aren't the only time that people are in need of food.
Someone from MICA once told me that one of the worst times is in the summer, actually. But I guess in the holiday time, in the winter, they tend to think of it more.
Yes. The holidays are a time of giving. It's more on people's mind. It's more present. But in the summertime, springtime, families are still coming in and needing food.
Now, do you have any idea why you had such a shortage that you ran out completely?
We did have an increase in numbers, which could be contributed to any number of factors, but we can't really pinpoint exactly what it was.
When people come into the food pantry, just by showing up, they're declaring a need. Do you ask them any questions or do they fill out any forms or anything?
We collect basic demographic information to help us with data collection. But by walking in our doors, they are establishing that they have a need. And they do mark down on a form that they, you know, have a need for food. But other than that, we're happy to serve. Families can come once a month to our food pantry. And in that time that they come to the pantry, they're given the amount of food to sustain their household size for up to 3 to 5 days. It's kind of an emergency food package that we give.
And the kinds of things you get normally are non-perishable things.
Yes. Canned fruits and veggies, soups, dry pasta, pasta sauce. Toiletry items are a big thing that we also give out and sometimes I think can be forgotten.
Right, like baby diapers, for example.
Diapers, toilet paper, paper towels. But yes, we appreciate every single donation that we get. It goes out the door pretty quickly as soon as we get it, so it's really appreciated. And even if you don't have the money or the food to donate, we also love to have volunteers at our office to donate their time. And if it's something you're thinking about doing, please feel free to give me a call, and we'd be happy to work with you on a food drive or even just an individual donation.
What kinds of things do the volunteers do?
So when food comes in the door, it's got to be weighed because we keep track of the amount of food that we get donated. So it's got to be weighed, it's got to be date checked, and it's got to be shelved on our shelves. Then once it's there, it has to be put into the pre-packaged bags for families according to their family size, you know, because when they come in the door, we like to have it ready to go to them right away.
I know my church has a big box for people to bring stuff when they come to church to go to the food pantry. So that's something we could remind people of. Probably your church already has one. But if not, you might speak to the relevant people at church and get a box put up there.
And another thing that I'd like to mention is that we are a member of the Food Bank of Iowa. So that means we're able to purchase food from the food bank at a lesser price than a person could go to the grocery store and buy it. So that's why a monetary donation can also help us stretch our food pantry a longer way, because your dollar is going to be stretched further when we purchase it from the Food Bank of Iowa rather than, you know, going to a store to get it. So our address is located at 230 Southeast 16th Street in Ames. You can drop donations off there. Also, our phone number is 515-956-3333, or you can visit micaonline.org. So that's micaonline.org.
Thank you very much, Josie Stalen from MICA.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI. As a service to our listeners, we frequently highlight community organizations. So that's what you just heard. That was Kay Puttick, one of our reporters, with a segment on MICA, the Mid-Iowa Community Action, and their food pantry. And we turn from Micah to someone else who's doing amazing things in the community. We now have with us Al Biella in the studio. Thanks for being here, Al.
No, thanks for having us here.
And you brought with you your daughter, Naomi.
Yes, and I'm very, very glad to be back in.
Ah, you've been on the air before.
Yes,
is this
times.
Your first time, Al?
Nope, we've been around
okay,
here before.
You've both
you
been
bet.
On. Okay. Well, we're glad to have you back. And Al, you are a music teacher in Ankeny and Ames. And
yeah, we have in Ames we have Ames Music Studios, and in Ankeny we call it the Ankeny School of Performing Arts, and we teach private and group music lessons, all levels, all styles, all ages.
But I've heard that you do more than that. What's this other thing that you're involved in?
Well, like right now, the reason we're here this morning yeah. is to talk about a thing we call Music Underground Ames. And that is an open mic for teens that we basically over the break we decided we need to do something like this. And we have our Iowa School of Jazz and our Iowa School of Rock programs where we group kids into bands and do performances. And there's just a lot of teens in Ames and surrounding communities who are into doing things with their music. They're forming combos. They're doing solo things. They're writing songs. And we're just looking around and saying, we need more of a forum for these guys. So that's what this is about.
All right, and it's an open mic night,
yeah.
which means any kind of performance that people want to do, musical?
Yeah. I mean, hey, I suppose if somebody wanted to come in and do beat poetry, come in, talk to me about it. You
okay.
know? Yeah.
Okay. And Naomi, you're a musician?
I am, yes. I'm a pianist and a singer as well.
So why, and maybe each of you could speak to this, why do you think it's important to give youth these performance opportunities?
I mean, I guess I can speak first. Being a teenager, there's virtually nowhere in Ames that you can go to perform that's not like a bar, quite frankly. There's no environment for teenagers where it's just like age appropriate and they're surrounded by other people who have similar interests or interests that maybe are new to them that can educate them.
Well, the whole performance environment, you know, it's like you're working on your music in your room or in a private lesson or in school band or wherever you're working on it. And the idea of taking it out into a public performance of your own, expressing what, you know, your own music, just puts the whole process in a different context. It gives you a whole different set of goals that you're going for. And it also fulfills the community aspect of music and communication and sharing. And it
yeah.
just brings all that stuff to life.
Yeah. And I would think it's really impactful for the audience. So even people who are going to go and listen and not perform are going to be impacted by what they hear and see.
Oh, absolutely. And you're going to get to see an interesting range of things and some really unique things. Absolutely.
Let's give the specifics because I'm sure listeners are wondering about that already. When and where and how?
Okay. It is the first one, the inaugural one.
This is going to be a series.
We want to just do this on a regular ongoing basis so that kids know there's a place that we can come and see this or come and participate in it. Absolutely. And so that is going to be tomorrow night at 7.
It's going to be at 3329 Lincoln Way, so that's kind of out in West Ames.
Is it Zeke's?
It is, yeah.
Well, okay. That's a great question. Is it Zeke's? Is it Blue Stem?
Whatever
it's called. The name's kind of in limbo.
So we figured
But just so people can imagine where,
yes,
picture where
sure.
it is.
Yeah.
The building formerly known as.
Precisely.
And 7 till whenever you're done.
Till 10:30.
We'll be open till 10:30.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And do people need to sign up in advance or what's that process?
Yes. And in fact, the Music Underground Ames has a Facebook page.
It also has an Instagram, so check both of them out.
Why don't you go ahead and tell them about this whole part of it?
So on our Facebook page, right underneath our cover or banner, we have a sign up button. And if you click on that, it'll take you to a Doodle sign-up sheet where you can put your name. If you have a group name, you can put it there and also who your contact person is. And that basically can give us a rough idea of who's going to be there, but also people can come in and play, although they will be put behind whoever's already signed up.
And any kinds of acts.
Precisely. It could sure. be anything.
And any age people.
We're really targeting teens more than anything, although, hey, I just, you know, I'm very interested in who's going to show up and yeah. be ready to participate in this thing. And, you know, I say teens, but even as I say that, I think, you know, how it's like, here's Naomi and myself sitting here. It's kind of an intergenerational thing for us, this music stuff. Even now with some of our student families in Ames Music Studios, we have families who are on their second generation of musicians with us. And so some, like, and I'm thinking of particularly of, okay, the Mark Bem, his family moved back to Ames recently, and he was looking for a place to put his kids in music lessons. He signed them up with us. And when he actually met me face to face, and we met face to face, we realized Mark took lessons from me when he was in college. And so his boys are only about 11 years old. They're not quite teens yet, but, you know, growing up in a family where the parents understand how this sort of thing works, these kids are actually performance ready enough to be part of the open mic. And, mm-hmm. and those are the kind of guys that I hope show up too as well. So a little bit younger people if they're ready for it, a little bit older people. I mean, I'm
families
yes,
performing together.
Absolutely.
Okay. And all genres of music.
Oh yeah.
Naomi, do you think, are you going to perform?
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't miss it for, you know, anything.
And what do you know what you're going to do yet?
Not exactly. I play multiple genres. I do a lot of classical, but I won't do classical because mm-hmm. it doesn't seem like quite the right form. So I'll probably go into the, you know, I play metal music, but that's a little hard when you don't have the rest of your band. So
right.
it'll probably be sort of in the alternative, you know, prog rock, bridging into metal. That's okay. probably what I'll do. But I haven't decided completely yet.
Okay. Do you know other people who are friends of yours that are planning to perform as
oh,
well?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I know a lot of people in the studio, but the Iowa School of Jazz, I know that some of those people will be coming. And I'm sure that some of the Iowa School of Rock kids as well.
So really, there's a genre-wise, already we have a pretty wide representation. We've got some kids playing jazz. We've got kids playing rock. We have a classical kid who plays heavy metal. And it all fits together.
So people will be able to hear a little bit of everything and see some talented youth who don't often get a forum and
yeah.
get to be heard and seen in that light.
Yeah, and we will, you know, somebody could come up and do a solo acoustic guitar song if they want, but we'll also have drums, keyboards, amplifiers, so that if kids come in with their group, then we'll be really, they bring their guitars or horns or whatever else they've got.
But you'll have the basic equipment there.
Yeah, and
for
we'll
that.
Have a whole sound system, so okay. that's how it'll work.
We will put information on our webpage to link to your Facebook page so people will be able to get more information. And you brought us some music.
Yes.
So tell us what we're going to hear as we go out.
We're going to hear a recording from our Iowa School of Rock summer session last year. And we did, actually a couple of our bands did covers of some David Bowie songs. So these are teenagers doing a really great cover of a very well-known David Bowie song.
And if people want to hear more of this, they should go on Saturday night to Bluestem/Zeke's from 7 to 10:30 and hear
yeah,
all kinds of performances.
Come to Music Underground Ames.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's hear it. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks
for having us on. We'll be right back.
That was a song performed by the Iowa School of Rock, and that's a little taste of what you can hear youth performing at Music Underground Ames on Saturday night at 3329 Lincoln Way from 7 to 10:30. But now that the holidays are over, we find ourselves nestling in to finish out the rest of the winter season. And this winter so far has been kind of mild, at least in terms of snow, been very mild, allowing folks more time to do outdoor activities. Mary Rankin, the director of sustainability for Iowa State University and also sustainability coordinator for the City of Ames, joins us now, and she's brought a guest with her to talk about ensuring that our footprints are sustainable when we head out to enjoy the great outdoors, especially in winter. Thanks for coming in for your monthly segment, Mary.
It's my pleasure. It's great to be here.
And I'm going to let you go ahead and introduce your guest.
I am happy and very honored to introduce my guest. Today, we're very lucky to have with us Jerry Rupert, who's the director of the Outdoor Recreation Program at Iowa State University.
Welcome, Jerry.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. So our listeners may have guessed from what we've said so far that our discussion today will be around the often heard phrase, leave no trace. So, Mary, let's start by putting today's show into a sustainable context. What are the connections between outdoor activities and sustainability?
Right. Well, it's so interesting because we always talk about the three facets of sustainability when we have the show every month. And I thought this was an interesting connection. Some of the connections I think our listeners, as we go through our discussion, can make more solidly. But I will say that if we look at the three facets of sustainability, the environmental piece of sustainability, obviously, our impact. What impact are we making on our natural resources? So that's probably pretty obvious as we talk about outdoor recreation. But then there's also the economic sustainable impact. And that gets into not only our personal economics and our ability to consider how we're able to save money and make the most of our financial resources, but also our actions and how they impact our local economy. And then finally, we look at social sustainability. That, of course, involves sustaining ourselves so that we are healthier, we can give back to our community, and also then the decisions we make and support around ensuring that our community is strong. And so as we go through this, I think we'll be able to make the different connections. I don't want to give away all of the great details right away.
So we'll be hearing about multifaceted connection
between
sustainability.
Right. Don't
and
leave your radio yet.
Outdoor recreation. All right. So, Jerry, let's then turn to you. Tell us more about the outdoor recreation program offered by ISU.
Okay. Outdoor recreation program at Iowa State is part of the Recreation Services Department. There's a different variety of facility options, programming options through Recreation Services, including the outdoor recreation program, but facilities, fitness programs, intramurals, which is a competitive component, club sports where students can just join a club and be involved. And there's some environmental components there as well, specific to what we're talking about today. As far as the outdoor recreation program, we have a variety of components there. We have leadership training for our trip leaders. We also have rock climbing walls that people can participate in. We teach workshops so people can learn how to cross-country ski and canoe and kayak and all different things. We also have a lot of trips that we offer locally and all across the country.
That's an impressive array of recreational opportunities being offered at ISU, both indoors and outdoors. So let's learn a little more about them. Can you tell us about some of the opportunities you and your student staff have been able to offer to connect outdoor adventures and participants?
I think I'd like to address that in two different ways. One is just specifically environmental component. We're involved in a number of environmental projects. Mary and I were just talking about the Iowa Department of Natural Resources offers this river cleanup project called Project Aware that we are very much involved in.
I've been on that.
Yeah, good for you. So we have been involved in that since the inception of that project.
Maybe explain what that is for people who don't know.
What happens is the Department of Natural Resources of Iowa, they choose a section of river in Iowa to go clean up. And volunteers can come and sign up for Project Aware. We provide the equipment, a lot of the equipment, like the canoes and the trailers and those types of things. That's kind of our part. And then they travel travel down a river for now it's a 5-day trip, and people can come in and actually pick up trash, quite frankly.
Lots of
a lot of
trash.
The stuff is, yeah, a lot of trash.
Big trash.
Like, tons of trash.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Trophy trash.
Yeah. Yes.
Right. Yeah, trophy trash. There you go. And I actually have a picture. My daughter cut it out of the newspaper of me sitting on two big tires with three other people in two canoes connected together,
yeah,
traveling down the river. And she actually gave me that for a present one time. Yeah. So it's in my office. So that's what that project's about.
Okay.
One of our students also developed a College Creek cleanup, the Arboretum cleanup. So those are specific things, but what we do in general is try to educate all of our participants on the Leave No Trace principles, which, you know, we can talk about here in a minute.
Those sounds like great opportunities, and I can tell firsthand that the AWARE trip was so much fun. It was great to meet people who were like-minded in terms of caring for our rivers. Yeah, let's talk about the Leave No Trace principles. They're a very important component. What are those principles, and how do you incorporate them into the various experiences that you offer?
The Leave No Trace principles, I'll just list them real quickly. It's one of them is plan ahead and prepare. Another one is travel and camp on durable surfaces. Dispose of waste properly, leave what you find, minimum campfire impact, and also the other two would be respect wildlife and be considerate of other visitors. That's one of the things that we try to focus on, that specific one. Even locally, you have to be aware of that as well, because everybody has a different reason why they go out in the outdoors. So being considerate of others is really important to us. So those principles are something that we educate our participants on. Every time we go out on a trip, we talk about that. And then we also educate them as we're out in the field as well on what we can do to minimize our impact on the environment.
Right, and that's regardless of even the length of the trip, right?
Correct.
And where you are. So you don't have to be in Colorado for these to apply, so to speak. You can be right here in Iowa, because we want to make sure that we're leaving no trace on all the wonderful resources we have here.
So it's not just if you're up in the Rocky Mountains somewhere or that we need to be thinking about these things.
Right, right. When I was I used to work at the Department of Natural Resources, was very involved in Project AWARE, and we always talked about sort of the state park or national park syndrome, right, where when you were there in this amazing, beautiful area, you wanted to do everything to take such great care of it, and then you went home and you're like, well, but I'm not in the park anymore, right? So it's that thing of no matter where you are, these apply, and even no matter what you're doing.
Even a local thing, you know, it's like just doing a local activity like sledding here at, off of 13th Street, you know, on that little hill that's over
right
there. It's like the one thing that I see that the one principle here that I look at is, you know, pack it in, pack it out as part of that waste management type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people, you know, tend to not think about that when they're in town, you know, or not as much.
Right,
it's like
sure,
when you're out in the pristine wilderness, it's like you don't want to see a piece of trash. And if you do, you pick it up and you put it in your stuff and take it out. Here it's kind of like, well, you know, let somebody also pick it up, or, you know, my Gatorade bottle's not that big of a thing if I leave it lay here, you know. So I think even here it's
right,
really important for us to be conscious of that as well.
As you were speaking, I was just thinking of transportation and getting to outdoor areas. So
right,
by organizing trips where you're sharing transportation, that would seem to make sense. Is that something you think about as well?
And we definitely do. First of all, it's the most dangerous thing we do, so we're very conscious of that. So the
driving,
driving, exactly.
That's an interesting
yeah
way to think about
it. It definitely
that's
is
very interesting.
Other people don't perceive it that way, but that's definitely the way we look at it. We train our own drivers, and we take 15 passenger vans, so we don't have to take more than one vehicle. So that's how we address that situation: is we take one vehicle typically on each trip that we do.
Right, and the skills you're teaching, too, say you don't need a wave runner. Look, you can do it in a canoe, right? I mean, those sorts of things. So you get more into the green transportation. I think you guys teach wonderful skills, even bike maintenance workshops, so that people have different options of getting around in town, around campus, around the community, that sort of thing. So lots of great stuff.
Are there other tips or pointers related to sustainability and outdoor activities that you could share?
Well, I think the important thing to think about is the holistic approach to it. It's like you need to try to take into consider all the things that you could do. And one phrase that's been around for a long time, and I'm going to steal it again like I always do whenever I steal great phrases, is we have this phrase that's called leave only footprints and take only photos. And I think that's something you can think about in a real general sense, that don't, you know, try to reduce the amount of impact you have by leaving the environment as best you possibly can, or even make it better. Yeah, that's kind of the way we do. I'll give you a real quick scenario. It's like, you know, if we're stopped on a beach, you know, on a river somewhere eating lunch, you know, the last thing we do before we leave is do a camp cleanup or a lunch cleanup. And we go down as far as even picking up the micro trash, we call it. Like if we're eating crackers or bread or something like that, before we leave the beach, we even pick all of that material up before we leave. So I think a tip would be don't think anything's too small. Make sure that you take out everything that you can and leave everything there. That's another thing that's important. Plus, sometimes it's federal law. You can't take it, so you better leave it there.
Well, it's part of the ecosystem, and it's an important piece. And of course, we want to think forward for generations that come after us, right, so that they can enjoy all that we can enjoy. So I try to keep in mind somebody did that for me, so I want to do that for others.
I'm sure your staff has a lot of Great Door adventures planned that people can take part in. So can you give us some highlights of what's scheduled and where we can get more information on them?
I'd love to. We just had sign-up day on Monday, and it was great for the spring semester at State Gym. And we try to provide opportunities for a very diverse group of people. We have 36,000 students, plus the community is available to can go on our trips on a limited basis, so don't feel like you can't go because you can. But what we have scheduled for the spring semester is anything from workshops and learning how to rock climb in State Gym, where we have a rock climbing wall, to we're teaching cross-country ski workshops, if it would ever snow, please.
Support that That's idea. A, I'm I, waiting I, to cross country ski.
I saw your sign on here says let it snow. I love that whenever I walked in. We teach people how to do activities. You know, we also have local trips. We're going to go canoeing up on the upper Iowa this spring. We're also going to go ice climbing in Minnesota. We have a lot of local and regional things that we're doing. But the big things that students look for is it's spring break. Where are we going to go over spring break?
Oh.
So we have 9 trips that are scheduled over spring break, and again, they range from surfing in California to kayaking and snorkeling and stand-up paddleboarding in Florida to canoeing in Utah to skiing and snowboarding in Utah and on and on and on. We have 9 trips scheduled for spring break, and they're very diverse, and they're all over the country. We're not really limited on where we can go.
Those are great opportunities.
Right. I'm flipping through this multi-page brochure here.
Yeah, I see that.
It's fabulous. And so many weekend trips, too. Mm-hmm. So it's not as though you have to take an entire week. And then, as Jerry mentioned, all these great workshops so you can empower yourself to even take a half a day or a little day excursion on your bike, climbing, doing all sorts of great things. So such a great diversity we offer.
And you said that people who are not students can participate. Many of our listeners may not be students, so can you just say a bit more about that before we finish?
Yes. It's primarily, we're a function of the university, so it's primarily for the students, but we do provide opportunities for the community members to be involved. Like for a really good one is we have a wilderness first aid class that we're going to offer in April, and there's a lot of scoutmasters or Girl Scout and people that are involved in Girl Scouts, and they're, at this point, my understanding, they're required to have that kind of certification now, or some of them have to. So that's a great opportunity where the community and the students and the faculty staff at the university can have a class together that we offer, but also on the trips as well. We do, like I said, have an opportunity for the local community folks to be involved in our programs, and people do sign up and go on our trips.
All right. And a lot of this information is available on your website, so we can put a link to that so people can learn more about it and learn not just about the trips themselves, but about the sustainability-minded approach that they'll encounter if they go on some of those trips.
Absolutely.
And that's correct. And we talk about that at every – like we have pre-trip meetings for all these trips or most of them, and we specifically talk about that at those meetings. So you will get educated on Leave No Trace for sure.
Any last-minute thoughts you want to leave us with, Mary or Jerry?
Well, I, too, am looking forward to snow. If it's going to be this cold, gosh darn it, we should have snow. That's how I look at it. So I'm looking forward to snow and getting out and enjoying the outdoors. And this is just, even though, you know, the temperatures are so cold, we may not think of a lot of the warm weather activities Jerry and I were just talking about. There's a great opportunity to be out and engaged in the outdoors and to consider stuff like this from a sustainable standpoint.
Thanks very much for being with us and for these reminders of being sustainably mindful in all of our outdoor adventures. We've had Jerry Rupert and Mary Rankin here with us from ISU, from the Outdoor Recreation Program, Jerry, and Mary from the Sustainability Project?
Yeah, Program Initiative.
Program.
Right.
Both with the City of Ames and ISU.
Absolutely.
Great. Thank you very much.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. This is KHOI, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Thanks to our guests that I just was talking with, and also to our earlier guests, Erin Davison Rippey, the Director of Public Affairs at Planned Parenthood of the Heartland, for her insights into the Planned Parenthood funding issue, as well as Al Biela and his daughter Naomi, who told us about an event called Music Underground Ames that will be taking place on Saturday. We'll have links to all of this on our website today, along with audio from this show. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk was co-engineered today by Evan Taylor and Vincent Valeriano, who is back from his holiday break. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. KHOI is a community radio station that is driven by volunteers and made possible by donations from individuals, businesses, and organizations in the community. So please support KHOI, your community radio station. It's very easy to donate or become a member. Just go to our website, khoifm.org, and look for the donate button. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show, which means that you can be part of our team of volunteer producers and reporters. If you would like to join the team, contact us at KHOI, either by phone, 515-292-2878, or through our website, khoifm.org. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.